the flight of the weapon, Tiago plunged his sword straight ahead, straight into the dwarf's chest. He prodded his lizard mount into a charge then, but rolled off the lizard's back as it leaped away, rolled off with a complete somersault that landed him back on his feet and moving forward, throwing himself with glee into the midst of battle. Better armed, better armored, better trained, the drow had clearly turned the tide of battle. One against one, few warriors in the realms could match a dark elf, but even among the ranks of these elite warriors, Tiago Beanri stood tall. His blade and shield worked in a concerted blur, sweeping and stabbing, blocking and parrying. His fight was not straight line moving ahead, but became a dance all around, the drow commoners gladly surrendering ground as he crossed before them, the dwarves wishing they had. The fight in that corridor had already favored the dark elves, but with Tiago among them, the fight became a rout and the dwarven line quickly shattered. Tiago brought his shield up fast to catch a chop of a dwarf's pick, and he enacted the magic of the shield, whose name was Spiderweb, to hold the weapon fast as he pulled it out to the side. The movement invited the dwarf to press in, and so the bearded fellow complied, leading with a fist. But Tiago was ahead of his move, and that punching fist met the tip of a fine weapon, a sword that cut through gauntlet and knuckles and drove up through the dwarf's wrist and split the bone of the dwarf's forearm. The dwarf howled, oh how he screamed, and Tiago pressed out fast with the shield, freeing the pick before retracting his arm. In the same movement, the drow warrior turned his sword down and under with a sharp jerk, tearing it free of the muscled arm and shooting it ahead only briefly before turning his shoulders to retract the sword and throw the shield out before him, to bull ahead over the dwarf as the poor fool fell backward and to the ground. But fell without a scream, for that quick strike of the sword had taken out its throat. Crossing over the falling battle hammer, Tiago broke free, leading the way, his wicked smile wide indeed. He saw Jarth battling far ahead. Up came the weapons master's blade, shining with dwarf blood, and down it went repeatedly. But only one blade, Tiago realized, even as he eagerly started forward. Only one blade. And one of Jarth's arms hung limply at the weapons master's side. One blade against a horde of dwarves pressing in from every angle. Jarth spun and struck, leaped aside and darted ahead, then back, brilliant in every movement. But the dwarf net closed, a relentless barrage of picks and fists. "To me," Tiago called to the warriors, now all in a full charge to get to Jarth's side. A charge that would not arrive in time, he realized. "Revel!" he cried to the mage behind him as he saw Jarth pulled down in the teeming mass of dwarf muscle. On they charged, and the mage's spell flew over them in the form of an amorphous green glob. It soared into the midst of Jarth's desperate fight and exploded into a cloud of virescent gas, the stench rolling back to make Tiago crinkle his nose in disgust. He could hardly see the tangle ahead through the ugly fog, and even the sound of the fight seemed to diminish, dulled by the thick haze. And hopefully, he thought, the fight had diminished, the combatants crippled by the stinking cloud. But then out of the fog came some of those fighters, a line of angry dwarves, spitting and snorting, but hardly slowed, it seemed, by the nauseating fumes. "Jarth," Tiago mouthed in shock as he drove into their ranks. Those dwarves fought valiantly, but like their comrades at the blown door, they could not win out against the superior force that had come to their tunnels. Several drow died in that corridor, but three times the number of gallant battlehammer dwarves met their end there, and a similar number were taken as prisoners. Tiago Beanri could not consider it a victory, though, because the fight for Kelvin's cairn had just begun. Because at least one dwarf had escaped the assault to run ahead to warn his bearded kin. And because Jarth, weapons master of House Orlauren, Tiago's friend and companion, lay bloodied in the corridor before him. Tiago watched intently as the priestess Sarabel rushed to Jarth and began frantically calling upon the powers of Lolth to heal the fallen warrior. But to no avail. Jarth Orlauren, Tiago's most trusted companion among the ranks of the rival house, lay dead.
"You should not have let him run ahead alone,"
Ravel scolded when Sarabel stood up from the dead Zorlaran noble and shook her head. Tiago's threatening stare reminded the wizard that he was scolding a Bayenri and one that could cut him into pieces. "What fool would cast such a cloud of noxious fumes over a bevy of dwarves?" Tiago retorted. "Their food and drink is fouler than your pathetic spell. Likely you crippled Jarth and no others, or was that your intent all along?" Ravel found himself back on his heels at that outrageous accusation. For was it so outrageous that it would not bring the wrath of Matron Xerath upon him? "In the opening salvos," Sarabel said with great remorse, drawing the attention of both. The priestess shook her head. "We must finish this fight in our favor to atone for the loss. Berylip will not be pleased. Matron Xerath will not be pleased."
"Unless we return with a gaggle of slaves to work our mines," Tiago said.
And he motioned for Driders to come forth with their shackles to gather and secure the captives.
"And with the head of Driz Doerden. Come," he said to Sarabe, to Ravel, and loudly enough to include all the others. "Let us avenge the death of Jarth."
"With all speed," Ravel agreed, "before a formal defense can be put in place."
The mage cast a spell then, creating a floating wizard eye which he sent off down the side passage. Others of Ravel's wizardly contingent did likewise, their magic vision spreading out among the corridors, showing them the way. Chapter 21. A Pile of Nightcrawlers.
"Where is your pet?"
Quenthal asked Gromph when she found him in his private quarters in House Bayenri. The Archmage chuckled at the characterization of the illithid.
"Methil remains in Cus Orlaren."
Quenthal took her seat opposite him, and she seemed far from pleased at the news.
"Still?"
she asked sourly.
"I can recall him at any time," Gromph explained. "And he is constantly, in my mind, communicating. Physical distance matters little to an illithid."
"The Sabarak is off to the east," the matron mother said. "Matron Xerath has not yet departed for Cus Orlaren. I do not trust her daughter Berylip."
"Berylip is of no concern. To me, to you, or to Methil, surely."
"Then why have you left the Mind Flayer behind?"
"We found an instrument," Gromph explained, a grin undeniably spreading across his face.
Matron Mother Quenthal looked at him curiously.